Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this modern dystopia, it's episode number 182 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, The Crap Bag shares some audio from HBO's new Tiger Woods documentary series. At 12:30, the NFL is changing up how it's conducting the scouting combine because of COVID. And in mere minutes, have the Longhorns homed in on their next defensive coordinator. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Let's go on a Tuesday, a little bit closer to the championship games. History always tells you we don't remember those four teams unless you're an NFL super nerd. What we always remember, though, is who was in the Super Bowl. And we're going to figure that out on Sunday. Super Bowl double nickel. Do the Chiefs get to defend or not? Will Aaron Rodgers get to go for number two? Is Tom Brady going to try to look out for go after number seven? Or does Josh Allen join Jim Kelly as that Buffalo Bills quarterback that Buffalo is going to love and he gets to the Super Bowl? And could he actually get the opportunity to go get the Bills' first Super Bowl championship? All of that on the line in the NFL. We've got plenty of college stuff to get into, like Trey said. We'll start with a little bit of bad news for the Texas basketball team. It's not about on the court. Trey, they had to postpone another game. So the TCU game has now been postponed for Saturday. So not only is this three games that have been postponed, it's three road trips that have been postponed. Game in Waco, game in Ames, game in Fort Worth are now all postponed. So if they're going to reset these, Trey, your basketball team may have to turn into like, it's going to be like the Spurs on that rodeo trip where they're going to be forced into a lot of road trips at once if they really are going to clean this all up.
Can we not squeeze in a Baylor game between now and Saturday? The Bears obviously looked good, took care of business over Kansas on Big Monday last night.
Good question.
They don't play another game until this weekend. Can we not squeeze something in on Thursday?
Thursday in Waco. If there's not like a women's game scheduled or whatever, let's go.
Let's do it.
I like the idea. In college football, we watched teams, I would argue, we watched teams that I would argue we watched them, they were nimble in their scheduling.
Yeah.
Right? That whole BYU Coastal thing?
Sure.
They put that together in 2 days. And remember when they rearranged the Pac-12 stuff and they said, we're going to send Colorado and Oregon to L.A. They'll play there just in case one of them is needed for the title game. And guess what? One of them was. They sent Oregon over to the title game and Colorado didn't have a game. So maybe we'll see a little bit of that. But talk about rust developing on a basketball team when you're used to getting the midweek, weekend, midweek. Sometimes you even get a weekend, big Monday turnaround, so you go two and 3 days. You want to keep that rhythm. So we'll see if Shaka Smart's group can come through this. Let's hope everybody is, you know, keeping it safe in the Big 12. But, Trey, it feels like Iowa State's really having trouble. And now I think this is TCU's issue. I don't think this is Texas's issue. Mm. I think this is stuff going on in Fort Worth. So best of luck to everybody trying to figure it out in the world of basketball right now.
Yeah, it felt like college basketball would be dealing with some disruptions just because there's so many different teams, and it's just one of those things. It's a part of the reality that we're dealing with right now, and everybody's going to remain patient. You reschedule when you can, but I think we also need to accept that some of these games will not be made up because college basketball has defines itself on two games throughout the course of a week, and you may occasionally squeeze in that third game if you're taking part in a tournament, Maui Invitational, something like that. But I'm not holding my breath on TCU or Iowa State getting rescheduled. The one game that I, most Longhorn fans, and I would assume the basketball team cares about is being able to show themselves against Baylor on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that game makes sense to me on eight levels, right? I mean, College basketball allows for those kind of games. College basketball is made for in-season games that are badass matchups that tell us something for the tournament, because you don't get rid of your opportunity like you would in college football. So I just hope we get to see two versions of it. That's, to me, that should be the Big 12's focus, Trey. But above everything else, can we get Texas and Baylor on the floor twice in regular season?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that's just good for college basketball this year. You have one of the two best teams in the country in Baylor, along with Gonzaga, and this veteran-laden Texas basketball team that also has a bunch of young studs that are projected as future first-round NBA draft picks.
The other weird thing, Trey, is that not this Saturday, but the following Saturday on the 30th is when Texas will play Kentucky at Rupp in the SEC Big 12 Challenge.
I wish the Kentucky didn't suck so bad this year.
Right. I mean, but even with a bad Kentucky team, the TV networks want to see those two get together, and there's some other matchups. I think I heard Craig say today as I'm driving in, Baylor's playing Auburn, which I think Auburn's pretty good right now. We know Baylor's really good, mm-hmm. so you want to see that one. So it's going to be the networks that keep those together. You can't say, let's have Texas back out of the Kentucky game and play conference. They're not going to allow you to do that because ESPN's locking in those games, and they want to see, especially now that Texas is really good, Kentucky could be off. Kentucky could be over, and people will watch them because they're a blue blood in this world, and then Texas is a top five team right now. There's no way they're getting rid of that ball game. So the Big 12's got to figure it out on the back end. One of our when we had Joe Cook on yesterday from Inside Texas, he looked at the schedule, which I hadn't done, and they're finishing up in late February, but they're allowing until like March 10th or so before the tournament, the Big 12 tournament starts. So they're going to have some leeway.
Oh, I didn't realize there was a buffer. I missed Joe saying that
yeah,
yesterday.
He said that feels on the calendar, there's a buffer week where you might be able to do it, but now Texas has three of them.
Well, and so, here's the thing also. Texas has a pretty brutal closing stretch in terms of facing the best of quality competition in the conference. I think most of the games are here in Austin, but Baylor, Kansas, I believe Oklahoma and West Virginia are all on the schedule at the end.
That's nasty.
So if you're playing Baylor one more time on the road, look, I actually like that. I think that does a great job of preparing this team to get ready for taking other teams' best for when you actually get into March Madness.
Yeah, because it'll be like that old thing of practice was tougher than the game.
Yeah, it's lifting heavy so that when you get to the point of having to perform, everything feels like a balloon.
Yeah, so for the record, you are correct. The last four games as scheduled are at Oklahoma, West Virginia at home, Kansas at home, at Tech. That's how it
at
ends.
At Tech, that's right, the other one.
The ones in Lubbock. So then you would have to turn around. So theoretically, if you didn't move anything else around, they would end the season with Kansas at home, at Tech, at Baylor, at Iowa State, at TCU. And then they'd go to the tournament.
And I'm assuming either Iowa State or TCU gets dropped there.
I would think
so. If you have that extra week in between, that leaves two games open.
Or, now what about this idea, Trey? Just throwing it out. If you don't want to do it, Texas, you don't have to. But, Trey, I'm seeing it, seeing the possibility here. What about on Saturday, February 13th, you're already scheduled to host TCU. What if you get yourself an old-fashioned Ernie Banks doubleheader going on? And if you want to, go old-fashioned Southwest Conference baseball stuff. Come play an 11 a.m. tip in Austin. Or what are they scheduled to play? Hang on. They're scheduled to play, I don't have a time yet, play an 11 a.m. tip in Austin, and then everybody go to Fort Worth and play at night, too.
And then in
just
true,
go crazy.
And then true college doubleheader fashion, you only play a half each time.
Exactly. Play the first half in Austin, the second half in Fort Worth.
And by the way, before that Kansas game, it's at Oklahoma versus West Virginia versus Kansas at Texas Tech, and then whatever rescheduled games happen.
Yeah, that's brutal. That is brutal. So that is some bad news to start with. Texas basketball team obviously playing really well, got the bounce back win against K-State. Now they need some games, and the next two have been postponed. So we'll continue to talk about that. Also, we've got Texas football updated information. Apparently, almost out of nowhere, I guess we could say this because we certainly hadn't heard this name on the list, but in the last day or so, word has started to spread, not really among the insider sites that we cover that cover Texas, or that we deal with that cover Texas, but really out west, the folks that deal with the Pac-12 and Washington started to hear about, talk about, report on, tweet about the idea that Steve Sarkisian was looking at the D.C. at Washington, the guy that's been, was with Chris Peterson before he left and now was with Coach Lake before, you know, when he got named
Jimmy Lake.
And the coach's name.
Here we go. Pronunciation snob here.
Here we go. I'm going to be the Brad Kellner on this one. The rest of you can do whatever you want.
No. You're not going to be the Brad Kellner. You are pronouncing it correctly.
I am. The rest of you will be the Brad Kellner. But it is Coach Pete Kwiatkowski of Washington. The name.
I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
Kwiatkowski. Five sounds. Punch the cow.
Got some vodka with that pronunciation?
Kwiatkowski. I do. I have a really good friend who is Polish. I literally, in high school, when the Super Collider was going on, a girl's family moved to town. This was literally her last name.
Oh, the Super Collider.
Yes.
The Superconductor Super Collider.
The Superconducting Super Collider. That's right. Her name was Anna Kwiatkowski.
And it was the same last name.
Same last name. Spelled exactly the same way. And we made her tell us, and because she would say, she's like, oh, you know, most Americans say. Like, no, not most Americans say. Because we had some other kids in the class. We were trying to make them feel at home. I'm not going lazy Southerner pronunciation. Tell me how you say your name. So we went through it. We practiced. One of my friends would always put the hand in the air when he would say, Kwiatkowski, Kwiatkowski. Make sure he was punching the cow. And
oh, yeah, punching the cow. Okay, so I see that you were still working in a little bit of Waxahachie
right,
with the proper pronunciation.
Because in those long Polish words, the emphasis goes on the next to the last syllable. So just remember, punch the cow, the K-O-W, you hit that, Kwiatkowski. So, and she was awesome about it, and we felt like we learned how to pronounce the name. So I see the name today, and I'm like, oh, wow. So I double check with my friend, and my friend tells me, she's like, yeah, I would go with Kwiatkowski. She said, but I'm assuming the lazy American version of it's going to be Kwiatkowski. And so I'm guessing that he got tired of correcting people and he probably will go with Kwiatkowski.
So this is the woman who has the same last name as him that you reached out to today.
Today, no.
Okay.
She has a different Polish name, but she is Facebook friends with this person and was friends with her and their families were friends and she knows how they pronounce their name.
Do you think that you and your Waxahachie friends took the proper pronunciation to a level that it probably frustrated her in the other direction?
You mean the Kwiatkowski,
yeah,
with the hand?
Like trying to sound Polish or Russian as you're pronouncing it, that can get a little bit old too.
Maybe.
Now, having said that, I appreciate the proper pronunciation here because
yeah,
how do Dallas Mavericks fans pronounce Dirk's last name? Do they pronounce it with a W? Or the W sounding like a V?
They got to be sounding like a V.
They go Nowitzki.
Right, because that's how the German language works.
Now, with this one, because the guy has probably conceded, waved the white flag, he and his family, the last 50-plus years.
I need Seaway to ask him one time when he does the first interview, just to give him a chance. Give him one chance to say what he wants, and we'll go with that.
And the reason why I say that is because on my podcast within the last couple of weeks, Books on Pod, booksonpod.com, I spoke with a former high-ranking FBI official who has an Italian last name.
Mm-hmm.
And the Italian last name includes a G-L-I, which is pronounced very different versus how it looks in English, as well as a double Z at the end. But I asked him specifically when he and his family gave up on pronouncing it like they're from Italy. He's like, oh, I've never pronounced it like that. I always go with what it looks like to somebody who's unfamiliar with the Italian language, because otherwise I'm just going to be correcting people nonstop. So the Kwiatkowskis, they probably reached that consensus at some point in the last half century too.
The thing I'm seeing on the text line so far that other people have seen, I will accept this one more than Kwiatkowski. To me, that is such a Southern lazy thing. Kwiatkowski. But apparently what people are sending me right now is Kwiatkowski. So they're going with more of a K-W-U-H sound. Kwiatkowski, trying to make it three sounds. Again, that's not what my information would tell me, but I'd rather you say that than Kwiatkowski, because it sounds like you just don't care.
What if we go the Waxahachie way with pronouncing Kwiatkowski? What if we put a Russian accent on Kwiatkowski?
Kwiatkowski.
Pete Kwiatkowski. That's his name right there.
By the way, score one for humanity that Waxahachie was pronouncing a Polish last name correctly when everybody else is getting it wrong.
Darn right, man. We had those Polish families in town letting us know what was going on. So however you want to say his name, the question is, who is he, right? Yeah. Defensive coordinator from Washington since 2014. He's been Washington's D.C. or co-D.C. But so, Trey, that means he wasn't there with Sarkisian. He would have come in when Sarkisian left.
Correct.
He's a Chris Peterson guy.
Right, and he was with Peterson at Boise.
And then, here's what I wonder. I wonder if he's a little salty because late in December of 2019 is when the shocking story happened. Out of the blue, nobody knew it was happening. Chris Peterson just said, yeah, I'm done. What do you mean you're done? Are you going somewhere? No. I just need to recharge a little bit. They gave him a front office job, and then they said that Jimmy Lake was going to be the coach. Well, Jimmy Lake and Coach K is what some other people call him, Pete K. Coach Kwiatkowski and Lake were co-DCs. Well, one of the co-DCs got the head coaching job, but it wasn't Coach Pete. Coach Pete stayed as the DC. In a weird COVID virtual, you know, Zoom call kind of world. And their you know, defense was what it was. I heard Jeff Howell, there's some good numbers out there for what his defenses have been. Trey, the sense I'm getting, third-party observer here, because obviously you want this to be fantastic as a Longhorn fan, if that's what it is. It feels like there's some people out west that are freaking out that this could be happening.
Yeah.
Like, they think he's great. Somebody overtweeted this. Somebody overtweeted, if Coach Lake and the other nine coaches left all at the same time, it wouldn't be more shocking than, or it wouldn't be more of a loss than Coach K leaving. I was like, whoa.
Well, that's a ringing endorsement.
That's too far, but I think you just sent a message to Texas fans. I read something else from a West Coast football tweet that they believe he's one of the best two D coordinators in America right now. Probably overcooking him. But they think that much of him, unlike a story where, say, your team gets a new head coach or DC or OC, and the previous school goes, oh, yeah, where do you get a load of that? Like when my Aggies got, what's the Chiefs' name, the D coordinator? What's that cat's name with the mustache?
John
Chavis.
Chavis, yes, thank you.
When they got John Chavis, a bunch of LSU fans called up the show and said, Chad, good luck, third and Chavis, that's all I'm saying. Those stories, I'm not hearing that.
Yeah, I have no problem what you're talking about as a Longhorn fan, Tim Beck.
Right? Yes, that's the perfect recent example for Texas fans.
Sean Watson.
Ooh, yeah. Sean Watson.
Herb Hand.
Tim Beck, the Hand. Wickline had a little bit of that. Little bit of that. Although he was more highly respected as O-line.
Yeah, he was more about the surliness, like the quality of character that you're getting.
Right.
And he ended up leading a charge, in a sense, of walking off the field during the Eyes of Texas being performed at the ends of games.
So here's what there is to like about this guy in terms of personnel. Right now they're saying 16 guys, according to a story I read today, 16 guys are playing in the NFL, Trey. Names people know like Buda Baker. Everybody remember Buda at Washington?
Stud for the Cardinals.
Oh, badass. Another one right there. Actually, one that they're hoping can come back this week and try to go to the Super Bowl, Vita Vea for the Bucs. Mm-hmm. He's been hurt. They think he can come back this week and maybe play in the championship game. Vita Vea is a guy that he coached. And just from an OCD crap bag standpoint, apparently the defense's nickname in Washington is Death Row. That's kind of cool.
Is it insensitive, culturally insensitive, to nickname one of his future defenses here at Texas if he does land the Longhorns gig?
Yeah.
The Quiet Killers? Do we need to go the Kvyat Killers?
What about the Quiet Storm? Can you do that?
Quiet Storm.
Yeah, there you go. The Qua Killers. I like Death Row, though, man. That's evocative. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I like it.
Having done just a little bit of reading on him last night and this morning, the numbers speak for themselves. They were really good when he was the sole defensive coordinator and have maintained that level of play over the last couple of years, too. Now, according to some Washington insider sites, there was some friction between, I don't even know how to pronounce his name anymore.
Now I'm in your head. I feel bad.
Kwiatkowski and Jimmy Lake this last year, because Kwiatkowski went back to sole DC role, but considering that Lake was co-DC before that and he's the head coach, of course he's going to have some say-so in what is being called. And Washington, although they were okay defensively this year, they were not very good against the run. Three of their four Pac-12 opponents, they gave up more than 160 yards rushing. Their end tally in terms of the record this season was okay. They were, I think, 4-1 on the year, ended up opting out of a bowl game, but he is still a quality defensive coordinator. The thing I worry about, though, is that they've already put a bunch of assistant coach pieces in place on that side of the football.
Yeah.
So are these guys going to jive with what Coach K is bringing to Austin if he ultimately is the hire?
Because you've already got Bo Davis on the offensive line, Gideon in some role, and what's the cat from Notre Dame? Is he coming for sure? Joseph?
Joseph, yes. Thank you. They are all three apparently going to be headed here, and you've already told Coleman Hutzler that he is not going to be kept around. Yeah. And perhaps that's a mistake because the base defense that Kwiatkowski runs, Chad, is you can either call it a 2-4-5 or what he refers to as is a 2-2-2-5, which is two
a lot of twos.
Defensive tackles, two outside linebackers, and two inside linebackers.
Uh-huh.
To go along with the five secondary guys. Now, I would suggest to him maybe considering going with at least a 3-3 for 1 year because your personnel right now, in terms of the depth you have on the defensive line, bigger bodies that can play either a defensive tackle or in a three-man front, they can certainly be space eaters in that regard, while also having a lack of depth at the linebacker position.
Yeah. So are you saying that Texas fans that are used to a four-man front who got sensitive about a three-man front might not immediately embrace a two-man front? Is that what you're saying?
The two-man front is a different beast for sure. And one of those outside linebackers is definitely used as an edge setter as much as anything. So perhaps one of the bigger bodies can shift to that spot and still be okay, but you're kind of wasting the depth that you have on the interior if you are not trying to utilize as many of those guys as possible from play to play.
And also, Trey, if it matters to people, I'll call him Coach Pete so I don't confuse everybody. He played at Boise. He was a defensive lineman there. He coached D-line and linebackers and D-line at the beginning, but these last three versions, he has been an outside linebackers coach is the way they're listing it.
Okay.
So if you're looking for a position expertise, I guess right now we call him a linebacker expert guy, but he's also dealt with D-line. He played D-line, so you would assume he understands the relationship of all of that. Like you're saying, especially if he's thinking about running like two-man and combo fronts and all that, he's got to understand D-line and linebackers at an intimate level.
Right, but he does make a distinction between the interior and outside linebackers, so you're assuming at least one more linebackers coach comes in. If it's not somebody like Blake Gideon, they also need to make sure that they have the corner position covered because Joseph, his apparent strength as a position coach is more safeties than anything else, but that you would assume is what Blake Gideon's strength would be. Now, Blake being a student of the game, not to throw the stereotype out there, I'm sure he would be a quick learner at the linebacker position, but that's something that is still a little bit foreign to him right now.
So there you go. If you want to call him Coach Pete or Coach K or Kwiatkowski, or if you want to hit me up on Twitter and I'll tell you how to really do it, that's the guy that Texas may be looking at for DC. Keep an eye on that. Also, Texas hasn't named it yet, but there are reports that Texas has found the replacement for Derek Chang, player personnel. We didn't hit that a lot yesterday. We'll get that name out there to you. Also coming up next, some NFL stuff to get into. They have announced some of the changes in the combine. What kind of challenges are guys like Osai and Ellinger going to have to go through to get noticed by the NFL? We'll tell you. Plus, Urban Meyer is supposedly looking at who for the OC job? I don't even think Trey knows yet. I think I might get to tell him on the horn.
Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and us feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way to New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time. I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose.
goodness. It would have been her birthday today. She would have been 78 years old. Died back in 1970, Janis Joplin. Me and Bobby McGee.
For me and my Bobby McGee.
Trey, I don't know if there's ever been... Sometimes in music, there's a great marriage between a well-written song by person A and the incredible delivery of person B. You know who wrote that one?
Was that Dylan?
No, you're close.
Who?
Kris Kristofferson.
Oh, wow.
And his delivery's not bad. He's Kris Kristofferson. Let's be clear. He's a badass. But when she sings it, it's a whole nother deal. That picture, the picture that gets painted, the windshield wiper thing, and oh, man, she does such a good job on that song. Happy birthday to Janis.
Yeah, that's her most popular song, according to random music streaming service. But my favorite in terms of the popular stuff is Cry Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's her voice the entire time.
When you let her just wail, when you let her go, for lack of a better phrase, when you let her Etta James a song and just let her go.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It could be, you could just literally sit in the back and crumple up paper as the music. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
Your voice is going to take control. We'll give you some Janis Joplin throughout the show today.
Do you have a favorite B-side of hers? Because I'm really mostly familiar with the hits.
I mean, yeah, it's. I'm trying to think of the one that would... Cry Baby comes to mind, obviously... you know, Take Another Piece of My Heart or whatever the title of that is.
That's Summertime, Mercedes-Benz. Massive. Those are the five that I really know.
The one for me is, and if you consider Mercedes-Benz a hit, then it's still a hit. I consider that my favorite, like, other Janis Joplin song. I love when she does that.
Well, that's getting played today. Because I'm just trying to find a sixth song now. So
I got you.
If you're listening right now and it's a much less popular song for Janis than those five that we just listed, me and Bobby McGee, Piece of My Heart, Cry Baby, Summertime, and Mercedes-Benz, I'm all ears right now, and it will probably be the final Janis song that we play today. 337-3776.
And she is one of those voices that people either lean forward or they run away. I know plenty of people that just can't stand Janis's voice. It's like, I'm out. It's Janis Joplin. I don't want any part of it.
Wow.
I know.
I don't know anybody like that.
You're a luckier man than me. I got people around me don't like Janis Joplin's voice.
Mm.
You sickos. All right.
Is one of them your wife?
It is, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. My wife has an aversion to some voices that I really love, but I get it. If you don't like the voice, you can't get there. I had a Rush fan send me their song Before They Leave the Earth the other day, and it was a Rush tune. They're like, Chad, I know your feelings on Rush. Just check out the song. And I haven't listened to it yet, but I got to give, I'll give it a chance, but like, Geddy Lee's voice drives me crazy. Janis's voice drives some people crazy. Dylan's voice drives half the world crazy and the other half loves him.
I'm raising my hand on that one.
You can't stand Dylan's voice. And then if you can't stand the voice, then how do you take the song seriously? You know, it's tough to do.
Well, here's the thing for me with Dylan. I respect the heck out of his storytelling ability via song. And there are certain songs that I can tolerate. But the stuff that I am not uber familiar with, it's just impossible for me to even get into.
One of these days, I need to do like a deep dive on Bob Dylan because Dylan has different versions of his voice. Like what the imitation you do of Dylan is he has songs that sound like that, but then it's just throughout the years, it's changed. It's not always the same. I wonder if there's a version you might like. Like if I go, okay, well, here's 90s Dylan. Okay, well, here's 2000 Dylan. Okay, wait a minute. Here was 80s Dylan. You know, just like, is there any of it that you might, you know, be into, or do you just hate it all?
Well, he did a good cover of Cry Baby back in the day.
Did he?
Yeah. Cry Baby. Cry Baby.
Well, I walked into that one. In addition to the Texas basketball games getting postponed, we do have women's games scheduled. Cross your fingers. Tomorrow night, it is 7 o'clock for Texas and TCU right over there at the Irwin Center. I think they're still going no fans on all those games to be safe, but double check me on that. High school basketball on the IHS Fan Network continues with our guys Rick Epstein and Rodney Rodriguez this week. In fact, it's tonight. Vandegrift and Round Rock at 7 Friday, Cedar Ridge and Round Rock. That's the battle of the top two teams in District 25-6A, so you'll definitely want to check that out. That's an 8 o'clock tip on Friday. Tonight's tip is 7 o'clock. All right, in terms of football, there's been some changes announced to the Combine. Trey, this was what I wasn't looking forward to. I wanted somebody to tell me that life could get back to normal, and the way it gets back to normal is everybody go to Indy. We're going to put Tom Coughlin in the same seat. We're going to have Belichick look depressed. Let's roll. Let's run 40s, right? Rich Eisen's going to raise money. It's going to be awesome.
Underwear Olympics.
It ain't happening. Not that way. They are not going to be going to Indianapolis. And right now the plan is that there will be no in-person workouts. Everything is pro days. So let's go Joseph Osai because it's the local version of it, right? He's the guy we're all looking for if you follow Texas. Where's he going to go? Joseph Osai, as I'm understanding it, will have a pro day at Texas, like normal, mm-hmm. but then that's his 40. So whatever 40 he runs there will be the 40 we're all using to talk about him as we lead to the draft. But, Trey, my biggest question today is what, if anything, are we going to see on TV? Is the combine really not going to be on television? Are they going to just stagger schedule the pro days like they normally do? And then what? At the end of it all, Rich Eisen gives us a recap show? Like, how are we going to do it this year? Or are you going to go multiple cameras and say, all right, we're going to send people to the biggest ones, right? We're going to have Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, XYZ on the same day. And then Rich Eisen's going to throw out to all those different versions. We're going to have reporters out there, Ian Rappaport, whatever. How are they going to do this?
Why can't we do this the way that we've been conducting ourselves throughout the football season? Where you're testing these guys ad nauseum all the way up to the point where they have to perform. I don't understand why we're going back into our shells here, Chad. This is not necessary. We have the testing capabilities now.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously a vaccine rollout that's happening for...
You mean COVID testing. I thought you were talking about football testing still. Go ahead.
No, I'm talking about COVID testing. The reason why we're shifting so hard away from this. I don't get it. You just ran a successful model. The NFL especially. College a little bit less so, but you mean to tell me that these guys who, by the way, are no longer technically considered amateur athletes, so they don't have to abide by those rules anymore, you can't have them come to Indianapolis, let's say a week ahead of time.
Yeah, because you stagger their schedule anyway.
Oh, by the way, hotel rooms are ridiculously cheap everywhere right now because they're desperate to get people in there.
Yep.
So have them quasi-quarantine for a couple of days, test them every day, have them stay pretty low-key in terms of what they're doing in Indy, and then show up to the freaking stadium on the day that they have their test and let them go through that. Test them one final time. If they test positive any of those times, well, they get quarantined in their hotel room and eventually they get to go home.
You can truly turn it into a bubble, and then instead of doing a no fans, obviously, then you wouldn't let fans in, which they have done, but you'll get rid of that. And then, Trey, if they really wanted to be extra safe, they could do. They've said they're going to do virtual interviews. Your interviews with the teams are going to be virtual. Almost all the medical stuff will be virtual. But if they really wanted to, use your idea, let the players come in, have a couple coaches there to take them through drills and stuff. But then leave Belichick and McCarthy and Andy Reid, leave them all at home in their facilities on Zoom. They'll watch it on TV like the rest of us and go from there.
Let those guys show up at the stadium. What are we doing inside stadiums right now? We're putting 6 feet between people sitting in one place or another.
That's true. And nobody wants to sit near Andy Reid anyway.
Oh, you think anybody wants to sit next to Bill Belichick if they don't have to?
You know John Gruden's got bad breath. They're going to separate all the time. They go 8 feet from him all day.
Yeah, all of the overweight head coaches in football are probably getting their own space anyhow. Mike McCarthy, he probably gets 6 feet from most people out of respect for their own olfactory senses.
So I'm concerned about how this will work, and I don't know what it means for those individual players. And then I think of a guy like Sam Ehlinger, Trey. Sam Ehlinger's got a tough enough job to get noticed in 2021. He's trying to crawl his way through a pile of quarterbacks or get you to notice him way down a list of quarterbacks. And now he's got to do it virtually?
That's right.
Now he's going to have to run his 40 here at Texas, but am I paying attention? How do we present it? How do we make sure the whole league is watching at the same time? That's going to be wild to see how they do that. Also, I think I get to tell Trey right now, it's almost time for a break, but I want to see his face. Urban Meyer is reportedly has a favorite for OC.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Tim Beck.
Nope.
Okay, who?
Scott Linehan.
Oh, my God. Ooh.
Yeah, baby.
Urban, what are you doing?
Reportedly, the D.C., reportedly he also might be interested in the Baltimore D-line coach, Joe Cullen, for his possible D.C. There's been talk of Chris Ash, There was talk of Chris Ash back in the day, or back a ways. Charlie Strong reportedly might be a part of things as a linebackers coach. But look out for Joe Cullen on defense. And Scott Linehan is the name I saw today as the front runner for their OC job.
Urban has to know better. Has to know better than that.
I would think so. All right, there's some NFL updates for you. Let's cross our fingers that the combine can happen. I also believe that around the 30th or 31st, they're still planning on some kind of Senior Bowl and Hula Bowl where guys are actually going to go to these games and play. We'll have to see how that rolls out too. All right, coming up, we will get back into the Texas football discussion at 1, but in the crap bag, got a little crap bag TV guide for you, including the Tiger documentary. I finished it up last night, and it featured a really solid moment that I didn't expect from one of my favorite sports reporters. We'll get that to you coming up on the Horn. Would have been her 78th birthday today. Maybe appropriate. It's raining out there today. Sky's crying for Janis in Austin. Somebody reminded us one of her first big performances. And a place she played all the time was old Threadgills. The original Threadgills location was a big connection for Janis. Every time she sings, Trey, and I hear one of her songs, I have the same thought process. Man, I hope you find someone that will love you for who you are. I'm not sure if it's me because you seem a little crazy. But good luck. That's what I think of when I hear Janis Joplin sing. It's so emotional and it's so incredible. But as it's going on, you're thinking, wow, that's a hard life lived right there. Like there's an edge to that voice that I think, oh, I don't know if I could handle that. I hope somebody does.
Yeah,
but,
Fiona Apple strikes me as that right now. She's got a little bit of a Janis Joplin in her in that regard. Now, can you recite the Sam Ellinger grew up rooting for Texas factoid with Janis Joplin?
Hang on. The factoid with Janis Joplin. Went to high school with Jimmy Johnson.
That's it.
There we go. Port Arthur.
That's it. PAT.
Yeah. And I have a friend whose dad was also at that school around that time. And he used to brag about that when we'd watch Cowboys games. Yeah, you know, went to the same high school as Jimmy Johnson and Janis Joplin. All right. We know. Yeah, he was there somewhere around that same time. He didn't know either one of them, but he always liked to brag. You know, you get enough the right drink in him. He was meeting Janis at the lockers. He and Jimmy were hanging out, breaking plays down. It was great.
All right.
You just tell the lies all over the place.
Al Bundyism.
Yeah, that was also the guy who could tell you if the Cowboys were going to win by looking at Troy Aikman for 2 seconds before a game.
How often was he right?
Oh, I don't know. It was probably a coin flip. It was probably 8-8 if we kept it. But like the Cowboys were during some bad periods. All right, so more Janis coming for you today on her birthday. Also in sports, you got Dan Reeves with a birthday. Happy birthday to Coach. Got a Cowboy connection there, of course, with Dan Reeves. He's 77. That's South Carolina on the old school there. It sounds kind of like a crap bag thing to say. Speaking of, let's get into the crap bag. I got a couple things for you to check out on television.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
It is brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. Trey, you know I am a huge fan of swearing in general, and I like when the swearers swear. I mean, Richard Pryor swearing, it's awesome. Red Fox and my man George Carlin, Bill Hicks, and all those guys. But there's something about when the non-swearers swear. When someone you didn't know would swear will swear. When you get that occasional Jerry Seinfeld, when Jerry Seinfeld was like a spray of GD into one of his acts. Oh, my God, Jerry just cussed. This is great.
Oh, Jerry just said the C word.
If I ever hear that, that'd be something. But in this case, it's a reporter, a sports reporter that you've interviewed before. I've always respected. Armin Katayan is a legend in the business, and he has recently co-written a book about Tiger Woods. You interviewed him about the book, correct?
Yes, and the book is called Tiger Woods, I believe.
It's either Tiger Woods or Just Tiger.
Just Tiger, yeah.
Right, and the documentary is called Tiger. So, and people can check that out, Books on Pod. Is it on there?
Yeah, so okay. It's Books on Pod, Tiger Woods, and it'll pop up, or Armin Katayan.
Go check out that interview with, I have not actually heard Trey's interview with Armin Katayan, but I'm sure it's fantastic. Now I really want to go listen to it because I've seen the documentary.
Well, especially because Armin is Armenian, so I took an extra bit of pride in making sure to put my best foot forward with him.
Excellent. So towards the end of the documentary is when this happens. So they're setting up the 2019 Masters run for Tiger. And we all remember that they came to that 12th hole and a whole bunch of dudes fell off the map and Tiger surged at that time. So here's Armin Katayan laying out the situation for you with Tiger back in form in 2019 and some of these younger golfers interacting with him.
There's a whole generation of tour pros that grew up idolizing Tiger, but they never played him at his peak, never saw the shots that they only can see on YouTube now. And there were some pros who said, I can't wait to get into the hunt with Tiger on a Sunday in a major. The f*** you do. You have no idea what you're getting into.
Oh! Please go listen to it unedited because it is brilliant. Well done, Armin Katayan.
The f*** you do.
Yeah, that's right. It's a wonderful documentary. I know Tiger's people don't like it. He is in the very end of it, though. It almost feels like he sat down with them at the end. They made it look that way. I think they may have borrowed an interview. But you get some incredible insight into the Stevie relationship, the stories from the past, some of the just weird, you know, way he treated people, way he ended relationships. Rachel Yucatel is interviewed for almost the entire second part of it. You hear her describe the evening where it all went wrong in November of 2009. That was incredible to kind of walk you through that. You also get to hear, Trey, these things always give me the chills later. You get to see Tiger and Elin, after everything's broken, walking through just basic situations, airports, trying to take the kids into a house, whatever, and the absolute rude things that are said to them by paparazzi members. Just the, and you could tell as well, but just like the lack of basic human respect that someone would use because you're trying to get a reaction. You want to get a reaction. You want them to yell at you. You want them to throw something at you. For someone to actually say out loud to Elin, what do you think of Tiger and his 14 mistresses? As she's getting one of her kids out of a car to take him into a house. Just dumb stuff. But you get to see a lot of that, hear a lot of that. It is, you know, obviously it's not for kids to watch in many cases. But the Tiger documentary is out there. Both parts are out on HBO. I finished it up last night. You may want to check that out. Something else. We always talk about how great an interviewer I think Trey is, and you need to check out Books on Pod. He does such a great job. Another one of my favorite interviewers that's building right now is none other than Stone Cold Steve Austin out of the WWE world. He's got great stuff on the WWE Network. If you're an Undertaker fan, you got to go check out the Broken Skull Sessions with all of that. But on regular television, it's on USA Network. It's called Straight Up Steve Austin, and he interviews a different person every week. They do some activities. They do some cool Stone Cold kind of stuff, but they also talk about their life or their career. Here's who he's interviewed in this season. Episode one was Luke Combs, the country singer, who I'm not a big fan of, but it was a good episode. This week, Ice-T.
Wow.
Next week is Tiffany Haddish, and there's a mixture of folks coming in this season. So he interviews a lot of different people. He's done one with Fluffy, the comedian. Was it Rodriguez is his last name, right? Fluffy Rodriguez. He did one with Rob Riggle that was really good last season. This season, he's doing Charlotte Flair. That interview should be incredible. So check it out. It's Monday nights. I don't care if you watch the wrestling part, but at 10 after Monday Night Raw, 10 o'clock, USA Network, Straight Up Steve Austin. And if you love the UFC, go check out the Max Holloway fight because he was amazing. And Conor McGregor will fight this Saturday. Work that into your schedule. Championship games on Sunday. Conor back to fight Dustin Poirier Saturday night. So don't forget about that. All right, coming up, we'll talk about the Texas DC search. Apparently, this is going to be the guy. The insider sites are walking right up to that line saying, no, not just the candidate. He's going to be the guy. We'll tell you who he is on the horn.